Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, Hyperthetical.
Welcome back to Angel on Top, a podcast where we watch and discuss every episode of Angel, one by one, spoiler-free, in tandem with Buffering the Vampire Slayer. I'm your host, LaToya Ferguson, and this week we're watching Angel Season 3, Episode 5, Fredless. And joining me as co-host is writer and former Angel on Top co-host, Brittany Ashley. Fredless was written by Mare Smith and directed by Marita Grabiak. It aired on the WB on October 22nd, 2001. This is the one where Fred's parents come all the way from Texas and make every Whedonverse character really sad. Start this episode real quick, Britt, by alienating our audience,
please. It's something I'm very used to.
Yes, you know this well. I'm gonna do a bit that will be a shout out to every Empire Diaries listener, and Pearl Jam fans will hate it, probably Angel on Top listeners will hate it, but I will just say, when a friend spoke in class today, when a friend spoke in class, when a friend spoke in class
today.
And that's that. Brittany,
that's me. Feels so good to be back. It's like wrapping myself up in a nice warm heated blanket, but it's no longer my blanket, but it still feels nice. So do you like this episode?
I love this episode, actually. This is the first episode of Angel I ever watched.
Oh, wow. Holy shit.
Yeah, so I officially had started watching live Buffy in season 6, but I'd seen some, like, reruns in season 5. So I'm like, I guess I should probably start watching Angel. And, like, I saw a little bit of the season 3 premiere, but, like, maybe, like, the cold open, but, like, nothing past that. And then this was, like, the first episode I really sat down and watched.
Hell yeah. Yeah, this is a... I really like this one. It reminds me, obviously, of Family, the Buffy episode.
Yeah.
It's very much like the test to see if someone is really a part of the, like, inner circle of the cast. And there's almost like a false villain. Like, you the whole time you're just, like, waiting to see if these parents are actually evil, like maybe they're robots like Ted, or maybe they're, like, you know, actors who've been paid or some shit. Like, you're wondering what the deal is, like, if they work for Wolfram and Hart. But the tragedy of the whole episode is that the characters that we know and love don't have a family the way that Fred does. And that's kind of the actual conflict of the episode, is just trauma.
It uses real Buffyverse knowledge of how television works against you, basically. It's like, we've set
totally
up, this is what happens when these kind of characters show up. So they're playing with those expectations the entire time.
Yes.
Which is very smart.
Super smart.
So I was a weird kid, obviously. That's why I'm hosting this podcast. Like, my favorite shows were The Practice and Ally McBeal. And my mother forced me to watch the WB to make me normal. And this episode, actually, I recall vividly, again, like, really my first real episode of Angel had the advisory at the beginning, which is like, this is recommended for the WB's teen and adult audience, which I don't understand why there's an advisory for this particular episode of television. There must have been for, like, other episodes of, like, Angel, like, this. I don't recall them, but I specifically recall them for this episode. I'm just like, what is bad to watch in this episode.
Yeah, this one wasn't like a particularly violent episode, and there wasn't like sex or anything. It seems like this was maybe the least damning episode in terms of parental advisory.
I think of literally every episode in season three, this is probably the most acceptable to watch.
Yeah, like the most like wholesome.
Right?
Yes. I mean, it starts with inventory.
Inventory. So, are we ready to get into it?
We're ready to get into it.
Previously on Angel the TV show, we have Fred, who is missing and found in Pylea, and she has PTSD, and Angel is saving her. Handsome man, save me from the monsters. I'm not going to do the accent. Don't expect me to do the accent. She loves tacos. And also, the host, this is what he does. We start calling him the host. We're three seasons in. We're still calling him the host. His name is Lauren. Guns gang shoots up Caritas. Oh, no! And then we have a knife at Wes's throat.
Yeah, so much happened. Truly.
Wes is upset with Cordy's weapon organizational skills. A lot of season three so far has been these domestic dummies, basically. It's just a lot of hotel upkeep, even when it comes to the weapons. And this is where we get Wes's the purpose of an inventory speech.
Yeah, it also feels kind of like the Wes trying to like take the reins on Angel Investigations, because there's obviously like that struggle for power of like, who is the boss? Is it Wes or Angel? Yeah. And I feel like he's trying to, you know, like, even if it doesn't actually do anything, just trying to like, you know, like rearrange the office so that it feels like his own, and get a handle on the inventory so that he knows more than Angel does.
Yeah, it keeps going on because, so in Heartthrob, Angel did complain about everything being all out of sorts. So they're finally addressing that situation.
But also previously on was that Buffy is alive.
She is. She's alive.
She was dead again, but now she's alive.
We have Fred asking, what time is it? And Fred has apparently been asking, what time is it multiple times, like a child, but which is how they treat her in a way, but like they're meaner to her than they would be a child, I think.
Especially Cordelia.
Yeah, especially Cordelia, but I actually love that by the end of the episode, like, Cordelia is the one who misses her the most.
Totally. Yeah, yeah. It is her, like, showing her cards a little more than usual. I think that Cordelia for sure would have bullied Fred in high school.
She would have. There would have been plenty of fanfic about it. Brittany, how do you feel about Fred, actually? So now that we can, like, really get into it.
I love Fred. She's such like a, she like fills in this void of wholesomeness that needs to be there. You know what I mean? Like, she's just so incredibly smart. She's so kind. She's so funny in like her own weird, dorky way. Like, yeah, I really enjoy Fred. And I think that she becomes like a perfect ingredient to their loaf.
I think rewatching this episode, because again, this is an episode I really love, and I'm sure that's probably not the case for a lot of people, because this was my first episode, obviously. I'm like realizing now that I have to like really think about it, that like Fred like has all the makings of like that new introduction of a character who's like basically the cousin Oliver, because like this is three seasons in. Like, who the fuck is this chick?
Yeah, I mean, I don't enjoy the like, I understand why it's there, like the her being kind of like obsessed with Angel. Like, I understand why she is.
We all would, as we see exactly. Often. Like, we would all be in the same
position. We'd all be by Brianna's. But I think once that ends, if it does, who can say?
I think we can say that, like, this is the actual good. End,
yeah,
right?
It ends.
Like, this is like, this is the conclusions. Like, she paints over the thing.
Paints over the picture of her and Angel on horseback. But once that ends and she stops putting him on a pedestal, and then I think she really starts to take the reins on like what her place is in the group. And that's when I honestly like forgot how little kid-esque Fred is in the beginning. Because my impression of her is, you know, like some of the later seasons. So
yeah, Amy Acker is arguably the best actor of the entire Buffyverse. Like, I've seen enough of Amy Acker's work to know how great of an actress she is. So I'm just like, well, I'm fine with this because she is that fucking good.
Yeah, I mean, she really like reminds me of Allison Hannigan. Like, I think that they have similar skill sets, and I think that they can operate in similar functions, and I think that they both, the way that they can act and the way that they can like shift into a feeling really well, is very similar to me.
She's worried that Angel's gonna get back with that girl with a goofy name. And here's where I make my one shout out to a heterosexual man, my good friend Chris Barbosa, who in college we would always watch the Angel DVDs, and a man and a woman can be friends when Harry met Sally. And we would always just laugh at the, well, Fred. So in the previous episode, Fred accepted that Angel will never be the guy for her. But, you know, you still have feelings for someone even when you accept it, you know?
Yeah, you can't just, like, turn it off. And obviously, when he you know, invites her for ice cream, she obviously can't turn off her feelings. That just accelerated them.
This season. Boreon is the season. He's looking good.
He is. And he's like, I feel like he's like getting into like his, I think he's really finding his like comedic senses as well in this season.
The wardrobe is great for him. Like, he literally like looks good in that. He gets to do both like, I'm Angel, but also like the comedic stuff this season. Like, this is the perfect balance for everything for him.
Yes, I would have to agree. How did you feel about Cordelia and Wes's impression?
So again, this was my first episode of Angel, having seen a few episodes of Buffy, obviously, before this, and I loved it when it aired. I'm like, okay, I know everything I need to know about this situation, which is correct, honestly.
Yeah, but the one thing that I was kind of like miffed about was obviously, one, they don't know what happened and I Will Remember You. So it is... you know, it's, I feel like whenever they talk about Buffy, they only are like, ugh, Buffy, she's gonna like turn our boss into like a hell beast again. they don't actually see the situation with all the complexity that it encompasses. But it's also like wild that we don't ever really get to see like Cordelia or Wes's take or like emotional response to when Buffy was dead, right?
Yeah, it's just like Cordy saying she's alive and that's it. We don't, it's the one thing that I miss of, like, I wish we could have is that just to see not just, you know, how Wesley and Cordelia really feel about Buffy being alive, but like the whole Scooby gang seeing how Angel Investigations like runs and like just seeing how Cordelia and Wesley have advanced in their lives, honestly. That's
yeah,
like the
because
one thing
last
I wish
time
I could see.
They saw them, they were like, sucking face in the library or like dancing at prom.
But even like Cordelia, I think they could believe Cordelia became a badass. I don't know that they could believe that Wesley became a badass.
I don't think anyone could believe that he became a badass unless they literally saw it. But Angel walks in on this and he sees it. So is it time for ice cream?
Boreon is, again, I understand why Fred is the way she is, because the way Boreon is looking at her, he's like, who wants ice cream? Is the sweetest thing in the entire world.
It really is. But it's also like clearly, like if they ever did date, that would be the weirdest fucking dynamic ever. And it would make me feel so uncomfortable. But it's like, that's why I was really shocked that she didn't have any like daddy issues. Because to me, I thought that it was going to be like a, like the way that she just like wants his approval and wants his attention, because obviously he's in like a position of power. I was surprised that she didn't really seem to have much like parental trauma.
Because it's all hero worship,
yeah,
after
that's
her
true.
5 years of trauma.
All right. Fine.
Yeah. Her thing's not a daddy issue thing. It's just trauma.
Yeah. Sometimes I mix them up. The being stuck in a cave for 5 years and an absent father. I get those
Brittany,
mixed
do
up.
You want to talk about your daddy issues real quick?
I only have mommy issues.
Aw. Make me sad. Yeah, they're in the sewer, and I love Angel. The TV show makes sewer seem so fucking cool. There's a big ass fan. I love it.
Yeah, sewers don't, I doubt they're ever this clean. I mean, Fred seems to think it's very homey and very cozy.
Maybe I should live in a sewer. Fred's right. I should move to a sewer. I don't have to deal with rent issues.
But they spot some little crystals that is apparently near the Dursler layer. We'll never know.
I think it's Dursler. I think you're getting Dursler.
There's no way we can know.
It's not a real word, so.
Then he sends Fred back, and it's just him alone. Then we see some, like, praying mantis-looking thing.
And then the theme hits, and then I have to apparently sing this now. Angel, the TV show is good. I really love it. Angel, the TV show is good. Angel, the TV show.
No, that's really good. That's really good. Almost too good.
So after that, if you don't let me do episodes for season 4 and beyond, you're racist. And this is where we return to Wesley. You know, back in my days as a rogue demon hunter.
Like, what days?
2 to 3 days as a rogue demon hunter. We saw the episode.
I really love the misdirects of thinking that we're going to get a vision, but then it's something completely different.
They full on play the vision score. I'm like, you bastards.
Yes.
I love how much, like, they're having a lot of fun in season 3, I gotta say.
They really are. And this little, like, spring-loaded decapitation device, I love the role it
or
plays
toaster.
In this. Yeah, I love the role that it plays in this episode because it's, like, it's just so clear that, like, they do know Fred and they have a grasp of who she is and what her skill set is. It's just she doesn't understand it yet, or she doesn't understand her power just yet.
Chekhov's toaster? Yeah, I love that. So Gunn's trying to force Courtney to have a vision, and she's like, what the fuck? And then when it seems like she might be having a vision, Wes is like, yes, yes. As I've noted in these past episodes, they've not had a paid case yet in the season.
Yeah, I don't know how they're, you know, like, you know how there's, like, some friends you have that, like, haven't had a job in a really long time, and you're like, how are you paying rent? That's kind of how I feel about my friends at Angel Investigations. Yes. So, yeah, so two laid-back country folk come in, and they obviously assume, you know, the team obviously assumes it's for their services, but they're like, no, we hired a different detective, and they've tracked her down here.
New clients, Roger and Trish. They say they're sorry to barge in on their arsenal here, but they're here for their missing daughter, and Gunn and them are ready to be cool demon detectives. He even goes on about vampires, Gunn does, and it turns out they're Fred's parents. And Fred's parents are played by Gary Grubbs and Jennifer Griffin. Gary Grubbs fucking rules. He was on the OC as the Bullet, and I love him as the Bullet, and that's good. He was also on Will and Grace, and he's been in a bunch of things. And, like, if you see Gary Grubbs, you know Gary Grubbs, basically. He's like one of those "Hey, it's that" guys.
Mm-hmm.
And Jennifer Griffin was in a show I really love, Banshee, as a despicable character, because a lot of characters in Banshee were despicable characters. She's also in The Lion Game, another show I love with despicable characters, but in a different way from Banshee.
She also has that look, like the rich, uptight white lady look, but then she kind of proves herself to be a very, like, accepting, down-to-earth gal.
She rules it up, basically.
Yeah.
And then Fred finally arrives, like, from, like, the sewer basement entrance, and then she sees her family, and she runs. It makes sense that Angel Investigations wouldn't think to return Fred to her family, because these are people without family lives. Yeah, yeah. So Courtney immediately backpedals on the whole monster and vampire things, saying they're L.A. gumshoe detectives, like... To which I wrote in my notes, these dummies and their lies.
You brought a prop from your movie when Angel walks in with the Dursler head.
To be fair, Angel just go along with it in a way that Lauren later does not, because he is so pissed at them.
We'll get to that, but I had some thoughts on that as well.
Fred apparently sent them a letter just to say she's okay. No address, and Gunn continues for the rest of the episode to dwell on the fact that there was no address on this letter. He's like, we could figure that out too. No, you couldn't. You guys are bad at this.
The thing that really made me laugh was when they're like, yeah, Fred's up in a room, and they go up there and there's just like a half-eaten ice cream cone on the ground. Like just lying there like she was an abducted toddler in the middle of a delicious snack. Like she couldn't just throw that in the garbage can. It showed a lack of caring for the floors of the hotel, in my opinion.
Everything looks the worst for both sides of the situation, really. Yeah, because like Fred tries to wipe down her wall so her parents don't see, basically, but that doesn't work. So she's like, fuck it. Drops the ice cream. She can't take the ice cream with her, but whatever.
They need a sign that Fred's been here. The ice cream is still cold.
Fucking Gary Grubb saying, aw, son, your prop is dripping.
Yeah.
Fred has parents. Because again, in the Buffyverse, you don't expect someone to have parents, especially not good parents. The deception, basically, is the fact that, oh, wait, no, they're just normal people looking for their normal daughter, and it's really sweet.
Yeah, and it kind of like also, yeah, like the way that it plays with the audience's expectations too, it's also like a really funny reflection of being like, oh, wow, why do I assume that someone's parents loving and supporting their child is like weird or like not something that would normally happen? You know what I mean?
Fred all alone on the streets of LA, which...
But she's, you know, she's like terrified of everything, understandably so. She doesn't go out into the world at all by herself. So this is like a very terrifying thing for her. But the place she does know where to go to is Carnitas. For old time's sake, I had to get it wrong. Obviously, it hasn't been cleaned up since the incident.
The incident. But yeah, before we do get to Fred at Lodge, I just want to say real quick, we do have an insert from Shallow Angel, which, as we know, is my favorite angel, even more than Old Man Angel, to which Cordy is like, she can't believe that Fred has snuck off. She's like, poof, sneaking off, right? But Fred can barely tie her shoes without saying, Mr. Oh, you're my big fat hero around. To which Angel quietly says, you think I'm fat?
He also like doesn't say it to anyone in particular. He's kind of just like to himself, which is, it's very funny.
Old Man Angel and Shallow Angel. Those are my favorite angels. Yeah, and we got them back to back.
The curmudgeon-y angel and the angel that's like very obsessed with his appearance are both extremely fun. Row, row, row your boat. You know what I'm saying?
This is how we learn that Lauren smokes.
He gave me that vibe. You know, it's the early 2000s. Who didn't smoke?
It's LA. People are smoking all around. Not me. I'll never smoke, everyone. Just so you know, I say no to smoking and to drugs. You'll never worry about me being a drug person.
But Caritas also, like, gives me the vibe. Like, I feel like I can smell what Caritas smells like, and it definitely is a smoking bar.
Yeah. Like, I don't think I ever thought of it, but, like, it's early 2000s. Of course, it's a smoking bar.
Yeah. But Fred has come here because she needs help from him. And it's interesting because I don't necessarily understand how his advice is applicable, if that makes any sense. How she hasn't run far enough.
Because he's talking about her trauma, because he won't just go out and say it when she's talking about her parents.
Oh, that makes sense.
I love that Amy Acker does have an imperfection in it, is her singing.
Yeah. her only imperfection.
Lord's literally depressed, and he has a point. Like, no one ever comes to check on him because they fucked up his place and no one came to help, which is a come on, guys.
Yeah, that, yeah, they should have definitely at least helped clean it up. I mean, they use him and don't pay him. Like, he is like a, he's a freelancer.
But this is actually kind of like a Buffy situation with like Amber Benson, where like she's not a series regular and Andy Hallett's not a season regular. And we're all like, what the fuck?
Yeah. So Angel goes back down to the sewer because he remembered, he was like, oh yeah, Fred really wanted to build a condo down here, so I'm going to check this out. But
pay paradise, put up a condo in a sewer.
Exactly. She's not there. However, Praying Mantis thingy is still there.
And this is not a teacher's pet situation. Oh no.
It's sure not. And then Cordelia is bonding with Fred's mom. And she reveals that she, so Fred's mom is a school bus driver, and Cordelia reveals that she's never ridden in a school bus, which, one, I don't know how that's possible with like field trips and stuff, but two, she does, obviously, that does track for like the true popular girl vibe who never had to ride the bus because she was always getting rides from like hot upperclassmen and shit.
Did she always drive her like Corvette her to Queen the field C. trips?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure she did. I'm sure she was able to be like, I have a doctor's note. I can't be in a gross school
Should we
bus.
Rewatch Inca Mummy Girl right now?
Yeah, and see. Yeah, and see if they just completely retconned her. She was on a school bus.
And Roger asks, which Fred's dad asks, what exactly does Fred do for you people? Because she's a physicist. Yeah. So, an understandable question.
An understandable question for sure.
And Gunn's suggestion for where Fred could be, by the way, is good.
It's a like, very,
We should look at the local taco stands. That makes sense. Like, a good thing about Fred is that we know she loves tacos so much.
Yeah, that's like one of the very few things we know of like where she would like to be.
Let's write in our Shantry prophecies that Gunn knows where Fred would typically be because Gunn cares about Fred.
Because Gunn listens to what Fred says.
Finally, Wesley has the good question of a detective should have asked at the beginning of all of this, which is, where would Fred go to for help, for guidance?
How did you feel about, so when they get to Caritas, how did you feel about like the Lorne hostility towards Gunn?
I'm glad that as much as there was an issue with the episode, they didn't just ignore that it existed and Gunn had to deal with the consequences of that.
Yeah. There was something really interesting about this scene too, with like they, so obviously like out of everyone, Lorne is like clearly the most visually different because he is a he is a green demon,
and he literally looks like the devil.
Yeah. And so, you know, like Wes is trying to be like these are Fred's parents, they're from the country, to be like, hey, they might say some weird shit to you. It kind of like felt, this scene kind of felt coded in like a I don't know, it kind of like reminded me of like a, hey, you're about to meet these people who are going to be kind of homophobic, but they like don't mean it. And so like when they bring up his eyeliner, like the thing about like, yeah, we don't get like got a lot of guys who wear eyeliner, at least not for long. It felt like weirdly ominous. And it's like, is it because they move? Like, where do they go?
It's so weird because I actually, so the first part of it I love, which is like, well, Wes is being like such a Wes where he's like, Lauren, I'd like you to meet Fred's parents, Mr. and Mrs. Burgle. They're visiting from the country. And I love that Roger's like doing a sarcastic, yeah, you have to forgive us hicks in Texas. And I love that part.
Mm-hmm.
But then I feel like they go to, because again, it's 2001. You're going to get bad gay jokes that like don't hold up. I'm just like, when he's like, yeah, we don't get a lot of guys who wear eyeliner, not for long. I'm like, because is there going to be like a gay bashing happening? I'm like, no, we don't want that. The first part of that was good, where you're like, yes, people from the country aren't like fucking idiots. That's okay. That's great. This is a good thing, like a subversion. And then the other one's like, yeah, we attack people who are different. No,
yeah,
we don't want that.
Yeah, that's what like, and I feel like that's what made like when they're trying to make Lauren go along with like, yeah, and like, you know, because you make movies together, and he's like, no, like I feel like it was Lauren being like, I've worked long and hard to battle through my own internalized phobias. I'm not going to pretend I'm not who I am just to like appease this guy from Texas in my own bar that I pay for. Like it just much felt like that.
He's experience. Right after what they did to his bar, honestly. Mm-hmm. Like, Lauren doesn't have to play along because, like, fuck them.
Yeah. Another interesting thing we learn about Lauren is that his heart is in his left butt cheek.
We might have known that for the pilot episodes.
God damn it. Well, it's the first time I ever really grasped it. So yeah, it was the first time I learned
insult
it.
Cordelia for her heart being in her chest, actually.
Damn.
Fucking freak. Fucking cow freak.
Today's episode is brought to you by Regal Cinemas. If you're anything like me, you deeply enjoy going to the movies. Going to the movies is probably among my top three all-time activities. I love seeing films on the big screen. I also love being around other people who are watching the same movie with me at the same time. And of course, I love eating giant buckets of popcorn. If you feel the same and you like going to the theater, Regal Unlimited is something that just makes sense. Regal Unlimited is the all-you-can-watch movie subscription pass. It pays for itself in two movie visits. You can see any standard 2D movie anytime, no blackout dates, no restrictions. When you want to watch a movie in 4DX or IMAX or RPX or ScreenX, there's so many ways to watch movies these days, your Regal Unlimited membership gets you into those premium experiences at a reduced cost. And with Regal Unlimited, you don't only save money on the tickets, you will also save on your snacks. And as previously mentioned, I love snacks. The only thing that can make me love a snack more is saving money on buying a snack. Members get 10% off of all non-alcoholic concession items with membership. Regal Unlimited, all you can watch movie subscription pass. It pays for itself in two visits. So if you're planning to see two movies this month, join Regal Unlimited and sign up now. You can sign up in the Regal app or on regmovies.com/unlimited. Sign up for Regal Unlimited using code BUFFERING and earn 10% off your 3-month subscription. Please let us know about all of the movies you see and how the popcorn is.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
So the interesting thing about the train station that Fred's at is it's actually just the hotel lobby redressed.
Yes, it is.
And not union, very well.
The smallest union season that's ever exists because it's clearly the hotel lobby.
Like, redressed. So clearly. Like, they really didn't. Like, what was the budget for this set? Like, $5? It doesn't make any sense why they couldn't change it at all.
The budget on this episode was all for the bug creatures and like the weird frame rate situation they were doing to make them seem cool.
Yeah, and to get Gary Grum. he had a very high day rate.
This probably was post Will and Grace. Let me double check because yeah, then that would have been like, oh yeah.
We spent all the budget on Gary.
Yeah, this is like right after Will and Grace. His arc on that. When I interviewed Charisma for Slayer Fest, we talked a lot about the budget, and the budget for Angel was pretty high actually, and like it shows because this was the first one of the first shows that had the show was filmed in widescreen, so it's not like one of those things with Buffy where like it was a shot full screen and they stretched out to widescreen and you can see people in the background. Yeah. Like this was actually filmed widescreen starting in season two. Like they spent money on this show, but like you can tell when they ran out of money.
Yeah, definitely. As a audience member, you're wondering like, okay, if her parents aren't evil, then why is she running away from them? And then when she reunites with them, I mean, you get like a very sad answer of why she didn't want to see them or why she couldn't see them.
I cried during this episode rewatching this. I haven't rewatched it in a while. And just like even knowing what was going to happen. And once it happened, I just started sobbing during the reunion.
Yeah, like she has so much unaddressed trauma that you see in moments, but for the most part, yeah, a lot of it is played for humor. And so this is the first time that both the show and Fred as the character is really coming to terms with the fact that, like, she went through, like, hell. Like, this was a scary thing.
5 years of trauma is real. And, like, I've been, like, upset with the show, obviously, these past few episodes. Every time, like, they make a joke or they ignore him. Like, why aren't you really dealing with this?
Yeah.
But, like, here we finally deal with it. Because, like, even it's basically the fact is that Fred is even trying to not deal with it. Mm-hmm. It's what it is.
I was 5 years and so lost. And at night I was all by myself and you weren't there.
Fred, I don't understand.
I got lost. I got lost and they did terrible things to me, but it was just a storybook. It was just a story with monsters, not real. Not in the world, but if you're here and you see me, then it's real.
Jesus Christ.
Sometimes when trauma happens, your brain will literally shove it away into a drawer that you can't open because it would be too painful to deal with it. And so that, in a way, is what she has done. And then seeing her parents, yeah, it is like it's confirmation that everything that she went through was something that actually happened. And she now has to deal with that, which she doesn't want to, because who wants to? That's why so many people don't go to therapy, because they don't want to deal with trauma and moving past it.
I don't want to deal with my trauma. Please don't make me deal with, cause my heart can't take it anymore. Real quick, I'm just saying, you're supposed to do Kristen Corner at Lauren back at Caritas, but we didn't do it. So Kristen, please talk about Lauren. Talk about those pimentos and the olives. Do it to him.
Sorry, Kristen's Corner.
Kristen's Corner, it's all Riley Dotson, what the fuck, at 40 years high. Kristen's Corner is the place for very deep thoughts.
Oh, hi. Thank you so much for remembering that I have a corner here named Kristen's Corner. So happy to be with you all. Listen, you want to get back to Brittany and LaToya, because how fun are the two of them talking about this television show? But I would like to play a sound clip, a little sound clip, because I have the power to do that. Let's hear a question that Lauren asks Angel. He asks this question to distract Angel, but I'm here to answer it.
And another thing, how do they get the pimentos and the olives, huh? There's a mystery for you. Yeah. Do they stuff each one by hand? Because, I mean, that seems a little time consuming. Or do you think they have a little pimento stuffing machine thing?
Lauren, that is a perfect question for this random ass segment called Kristen's Corner. And I will tell you, up until the early 1960s, pimentos, which are peppers, I'm going to get into that in a second. You just hang tight. Pimentos were sliced and they were stuffed into olives by hand. Now, this information is from an article on Mental Floss, and the article says, stuffed into olives by hand, presumably by patient workers with long, tapery fingers. So I just want everybody to take a moment. Look down at your own fingers. Do you think you have fingers that are long and tapery enough to fit a pimento and an olive? Okay, great. That was our interactive moment of the segment. Now I would like to tell you that in 1962, a company in Spain introduced the first automatic olive stuffing machine. That company, Sadrim, I believe is the name of it, is the largest manufacturer of the olive stuffing machine today. Now listen, this pimento stuffing machine, this olive stuffing machine, it has to be very precisely calibrated. First, it cuts, I'm reading from the article now, a plug the size of the pit in one end of the olive and pushes the pit out using an X-shaped punch on the opposite end of the fruit. Olives are fruits. Who knew? Then the pitted olive moves to the next station where a strip of pimento is cut and injected into the cavity. Wow. These Kristen's Corners are just getting sexier by the minute. So now you know, Lorne, that's how a pimento gets into an olive. Not by hand anymore, but if you travel back in time to a time before 1962, you can look for the tapery fingered olive stuffers. I had a big plan about telling you about like the heat of chili peppers and then like tying it into the episode, but I've just had way too much fun by myself in my recording closet with this Kristen's Corner to even go any further. So I think we were talking about a grand reunion at a bus station. Brittany and LaToya are going to take you back to that moment of reunion. And as I would like to say, back to the pimento show. Am I fired?
Kristen's Corner. Kristen's Corner. It's all right, it's up to what the fuck if 40 is hot. Kristen's Corner is the place for very deep thoughts.
It's a very sweet reunion. You're safe now. But then, of course, the like praying mantis thing shows up.
And the frame rate is like going out of control.
Yeah.
Because this is how we show that it's intimidating.
And this is also where Fred's parents learn that Angel is a vampire. The team has to breeze through that explanation really quickly.
So Wesley gives the explanation to what happened to Angel's face, to which Angel, Wes says, Angel's a vampire. He has a soul, but it's a long story. I'll tell you about it if we don't end up dying. Having a soul as a vampire means nothing to a human in this world. It's just like saying, literally could say, Angel's a vampire. I'll tell you about it if we don't end up dying. That's the line.
Yeah.
Like, that's what you have to say. The soul part, like, what the fuck does that mean is what Roger should have said.
Yeah. I love the, that's my daughter, you damn cockroach. I'm the father of a daughter, you goddamn cockroach.
Roger is so much the father of a daughter, but in a good way.
Yeah. He's like a, yeah, he's a less problematic Trevor Lockley. He's like a Hank Hill.
I never get to talk about Trevor Lockley on this podcast. What a piece of shit. What a piece of shit.
Yeah, Trevor Lockley sucks. So sometimes when information drops in an episode, you're like, well, you know, did we really need to know that Fred's mom was a bus driver? But yeah, we did. Because splat, bus driver and mommy... kills this cockroach and it looks like the purple ooze from the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers movie.
Ooh, Ivan Ooze? Ivan Ooze?
That's the
Patreon kind. Episode where we talk about the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers movie, because I could do that for hours.
Oh, maybe. Same. But given how, I mean, after this thing dies, given how much information Fred's parents had to learn in a very short span of time, they're very cool with everything and they're actually pretty supportive of Fred and proud of her even, but they've adapted very quickly, which is also feels like flipping what we'd expect, especially if you've seen from the country. Yeah, and also the country. But also, like, it feels like a happy ending version of the family episode of Buffy.
Gary Grubbs more accepting than Amy Adams. That's what we're saying here.
Yeah, as people. But there is this line, I think it's when Cordelia says, like, I gotta say, this is not how I pictured it turning out. Because it's just saying exactly what the audience is thinking of, like, how the episode is turning out.
And I just want to say that when Trish, Fred's mom, saves the day by driving a bus, as you do, she does ask, did I get it?
Yeah.
Did I get it, y'all? Which is a callback to the season 3 Buffy episode, Gingerbread, by the way.
What was the, who said that?
Buffy says it when she impales the fucking Hansel and Gretel demon.
Oh my with God.
You can see what I'm doing.
Yes, I do.
She impales it and she like it gives it like right in the throat. And she's like, did I get it?
Oh my God.
Did I get it? I love that Cordy's like patching up Fred and Gunn, bless his heart, to go real Texan and Southern in general, bless his heart. Who believes that the head that Angel brought is really paper mache?
Yeah. A rare moment of Gunn being kind of a himbo.
Gunn is a himbo, and that's actually what is best for him. Himbos are good and pure, and that's what Gunn is.
He really is.
Yeah. And Angel was there, like, just watching them be a happy family and, like, jealous because what's a happy family?
So, yeah. So when Fred is, like, listing off everyone's role in the team, she's like, yeah, Angel's the champion, Wes is the brains, Gunn's the muscle, Cordy's the heart, and that's all, I guess. Just, it's like, I guess I don't fit in at all.
I first of all, I love that you're doing a Fred impression. Should we talk about the email we got for this one specifically?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So we got a fan email for this particular scene. Actually, well, I need you to read this because I want you to do a British accent.
Hey guys, I'm Izzy and I live in England. I'm 14 years old and I absolutely love your Buffy and Angel podcast so much. This is just a quick question, but in the episode Fredless, Fred explains that Angel is the champion, Cordy's the heart, Wesley's the brains, and Gunn is the muscle. So my question is, what is Fred? I honestly think that she is more the heart, especially because of what happens in later seasons, but she would also be the brains. I'm just interested to know what you think she is. Izzy, kisses, kisses, kisses?
That was great.
Thank you so much.
And also thank you, Izzy.
I think that she's like the inventor. She's like the, I think she's the brains.
Yeah, she's the brains in a different way. Cause like Wesley's the brains in terms of the mystical and supernatural, but like she's the brains in terms of the science, but not in a way that ignores that the mystical exists, but like she can logically explain why these things are happening.
Yeah, too. Like Wes is like the boss, but she's the brains. So how did you feel about the, like, when Fred's dad is trying to show how accepting he is, he's like, I don't care if you drink pig's blood, cow's blood, or those froofy little imported beers. It kind of felt like a weird, like being a blood-sucking demon is the same as being a gaylord, or worse, a woman. It was like this paradox of like trying to show how accepting you are by pointing out that you're so cool with what you say you're cool with by showing everyone how you actually feel by categorizing like things that are not alike. Does that make any sense? Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah. Cause the froofy specifically is the thing that makes it
like,
what it is.
I don't care if you kill people or you're gay. It's like, what? like that it's not like, this thing isn't accepted by other people and not worthy of it, but it's accepted by me and I'm cool with that.
I feel like they make it so Fred's parents are accepting and it works. They shouldn't have added the eyeliner line, because I feel like that's like too dangerous. Maybe don't say the eyeliner line, but like, yeah, they don't stay for long. Like, well, that's scary.
Yeah, but I feel Lorne got...
Their acceptance works better if you don't have that line at all.
Yeah, it like... To me, it like kind of painted like what Lorne got the vibe of like, oh, these aren't my people. Bye. Get out of my karaoke bar.
Yeah.
But from this, you know, conversation of Fred, you know, listing off everyone's role, she decides that she wants to go home because she thinks
she doesn't
that
think she has a role. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, Angel enters Fred's room when she's like packing up and she's feeling every feeling under the sun. And, you know, she's talking about the story that's in the wallpaper. It's a fairy tale. Angel's the handsome prince who saved her. And yeah, it does. It shows like the story that she had to tell herself in order to cope, which, you know, that's why it makes it so much more powerful when she and the others are like painting over it. It's that like, okay, yeah, this was just a story I had to tell myself, but it's not the actual one. Yeah. Like the actual one is the real one.
Yeah. She says like dumb old fairy tales and they're happily ever after.
Now you'd think that was the end, wouldn't you? Dumb old fairy tales and their happily ever afters. The minute they got back to the castle, the handsome man went away again. And even though she didn't mean to, didn't want to, high up in that castle, the girl just built herself another cave, hoping that he would save her again. But you can't save me this time, can you?
But yeah, Fred says her goodbyes, and yeah, the like cute moment where Cordelia's like, between you and me, I'm almost a little jealous, is really sweet.
It's necessary for what we've had this season with Cordy being, Cordy's like been the most like intolerable when it comes to Fred.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, it could be because she has to like split her money more, or because of the fact
money?
Like,
they're not having jobs.
Yeah, that too. Or because of the fact that like Fred is so like dependent on Angel's attention, and that's probably really annoying too. Like there's a lot of reasons why she's kind of just annoyed with Fred. But yeah,
I do wonder if Cordy is worried about like Fred getting Angel's attention, because I feel like Angel still gives Cordy all the amount of attention she deserves as well. If anything, like it's Wes and Gunn who are getting less attention because of Fred and not Cordy, you know.
True, that's very true. I think they're all kind of reflecting on the fact that they don't have this option, because obviously Gunn's sister Alana, she is dead. She's the only other family member that up until this point we really knew. And, you know, the friends that he had that he would go, you know, demon hunting with, that has been cut off as of recently. So Angel Investigations is his only family. Cordelia's dad drove their family into the ground financially, and from what we know, she hasn't talked to them anymore. Wes has like a very tumultuous relationship with his dad, which get a little more of. And you know, Angel, you know, he killed his family. It's all equal things.
This is all equal.
Yeah. But, you know, we're still obviously like, we're almost done with the episode. We're trying to figure out like, okay, is there zero threat in this episode at all? And when Fred is, you know, in the cab with her parents, she realizes that those crystals that she saw in the cave are on her shirt now. And so she's like, okay, something is fucking up. And then we cut back to the hotel. The praying mantis thing is here once again. By the way, did you see the ass on that thing?
Are you saying it's time for fuckwits? Fuckwatch. As the guest, Brittany.
I mean,
tell us, what's your fuckwatch pick?
I mean, the praying mantis just really, like, first of all they wanted was one thing. They just wanted to see their children. And you know what I mean? Like, at all costs, this mother just wanted to protect her babies.
Mother or father. Or father.
Oh, yeah. They are genderless. That's right. But just for my own issues, I'm going to say mother. and gorgeous caboose.
Gorgeous. Wow.
And I just think that, you know, this praying mantis didn't want to cause any harm either. Like, it's so rare that we run into a demon or a creature that, like, really just wants to, like, get by unscathed and is like, okay, if I have to, like, fight you, fine, but I don't really want to. I just like want to live my own life too. Like, maybe this could be another member of Angel Investigations.
I am not gonna say a demon for my fuck watch, which is it's gonna be Trish Burkle, Fred's mom, when she's driving that bus and she goes boom.
Yeah,
did I get it?
She has y'all? Good timing. She also like clearly has initiative where she's like, nobody's gonna just tell me to get in a bus and like hotwire it maybe and then kill this thing. She like thought of that on her own. She is Fred's mother.
Fuck watch.
So we're at the hotel and, you know, this demon or this creature, they don't know how to fight it. And then all of a sudden, Fred is back and she sets up her little toaster. And she kicks it or, she pushes the pedal or whatever. And then this axe comes out and it doesn't hit the praying mantis, it hits the Dursler head, and then a bunch of, you know, like little cockroaches come out, which is
that's why really grody. It was an advisory. It's the cockroaches. I remember watching this like originally and being like, oh no, I don't like that at all.
Yeah, that is a grody scene. But then, you know, this gender neutral praying mantis comes up, scoops up their babies, and then just leaves. And that is the reason that this thing was following Angel around, because he brought the head back like a little dummy, and the whole hive showed up to reclaim the offspring. And obviously thematically, that's what Fred's parents did as well. It's all about parents, man.
Parents, man. I'm just going to say it's time to talk about what episode of the WB
Hell yeah.
Should Angel watch?
I'm excited to hear.
WB.
They get that hot teen drama to ease the pain and trauma, and here's the episode that he needs to see. Oh, yeah.
This isn't exactly an episode that Angel should watch. Maybe the whole team, maybe Fred. This is an episode about just like teamwork and how important it is. So this is the pilot for the television show and adaptation of the book series Fearless, which you might be thinking, well, that never aired. And that's true, actually. So Fearless, based on the book series, was ordered to series for the 2003-2004 WB television season, produced by Jerry Bruckheimer. Maybe you've heard of him.
The Bruck?
Oh, Bruck. And that didn't happen. They decided maybe we should. Jerry Bruckheimer himself decided, actually, we're going to air in mid-season because we're not ready to air, pretty much. But just so you know, Fearless starred Rachel Lee Cook, Eric Balfour, maybe you know from Buffy the Vampire Slayer as Jesse.
Sure do.
In the pilot of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Also starred Bianca Lawson, maybe you know from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
As Kendra.
Also starred a little handsome man named Ian Somerhalder.
Oh, from Vampire Diaries.
Yes, he's not from Vampire Diaries. He is from the podcast, The Vampire Diaries. He plays on The Vampire Diaries the character known as Damo. Maybe you've heard of him. But yeah, so Fearless was based on a book series about this young woman who, she was born without the fear gene. So she didn't fear things. So when WB got a hold of it, it's like, we're going to age her up, make her an FBI agent, and she's an FBI agent without the fear gene. And that is our Rachel Lee Cook character. Gaia, what a name. She was a lone wolf in the FBI. And, you know, she had to deal with partners who depend on her, which were, of course, played by Eric Balfour and Bianca Lawson. And you have Ian Somerhalder playing, like, the hacker with a heart of gold, because Ian Somerhalder, for a long time, played the most earnest characters you could ever find, despite looking like Ian Somerhalder. Literally, that pilot is just about Gaia learning how to be part of a team and accepting people and just all working together, which is something Fred learns here. And you know what? All of Angel Investigations could really appreciate this Fearless pilot, because being a team and learning to be a family and, you know, learning to interact to this, the tunes of Extraordinary by Liz Phair. That's how you work as a human being. Do you want me to tell you the soundtrack to this pilot of like television?
I absolutely want to hear that.
Okay, as I said, Extraordinary, Liz Phair, from the album Liz Phair, the best Liz Phair album. I said it. Yeah, the best one. Don't Let Me Get Me, Pink. Beautiful. Beautiful, Pharrell and Snoop Dogg. The Reckoning, Boomcat. The Name of the Game, The Crystal Method. In My Place, Coldplay. Seven Nation Army, The White Stripes. That's the climax of the episode. And do you want to know how the episode closes? Can you guess, Brittany?
Wait, give me like a genre.
Pop rock? Female vocalist. 2003-2004.
I want to say like Fifi Dobson.
That would have been great if Fifi was in it, but she's not. The answer is Bring Me to Life, Evanescence.
Oh my God.
That's how it ends when Guy is like, I'm going to let you guys in on my secret about being fearless.
I can't work out. It's a really fun karaoke song to do, by the way. So yeah,
did you like that, Brittany?
I love that. Like that. So I also love that Fred has decided to stay. She's decided that she like can't go back now knowing what she knows. She needs to contribute and they're all really happy. The cute thing that her parents say is like, yeah, we were kind of hoping that you wouldn't figure that out. They're like trying to balance their own sadness that she's not going to be going back home with them, but they're also probably happy that they don't have to like rearrange her room that they filled up with other shit.
They did. They rented it out. It was after her fourth year,
yeah,
being like having disappeared after 4 out of 5 years. Like, it makes sense.
It makes sense. I get it. They got to pay rent. and then it cuts to like a sweet moment of all of them painting the walls of her bedroom, painting over her trauma together as a team.
Beautiful.
Well, this is so delightful.
Oh, a delightful thing about an episode about trauma, like that's what the episode is about,
but it was also about healing trauma.
There are technically fun episodes after this one, but they're all very much in within the arcs of the season. Why are you showing me your guitar?
My cat.
Hi cat.
Hey Fleabag, do you see the toy?
Hi.
she's a little sweetie pie.
Hey Brittany.
Yes.
Where can people find you?
People can find me at Britt27Ash on Instagram and Twitter. That's BRITT27ASH. Yes. And I also have a website, BrittanyAshleyFunny.com, where I also just recently in October wrote a Halloween themed Buffy crossover with my so-called life spec. So feel free to read that. It's on my website.
Cool.
Extremely cool.
And of course, follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Angel on Top Cast. Email us at angelontoppodcast@gmail.com. Go to angelontop.com immediately.
You must.
You go to our Patreon. Give me money, baby. And just, you know, if you want to tweet me, because I don't do Instagram because I am old, tweet me at LaFergs, LaFergs. I will be tweeting about something. Maybe it's Ted Lasso. Maybe it's the Vampire Diaries. Maybe it's Angel. Maybe it's just about my vodka martini because I'm sad because I did not get a job I wanted.
It could be about anything. Who can know?
Yeah.
We can't say.
Who can know? There will be a fun shift to these episodes starting in the new year, and I think you guys will appreciate it. And if not, don't tell me. Yeah. Don't tell anyone.
Write
if
it,
you don't like it,
write it in a note, burn it, and then carry on.
And that's it. That's the show.
Anna Sheridan, New York Times bestselling author of supernatural horror. Missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Is the compass broken? Or did I turn to the spirit cabinet?
Given the circumstances of her disappearance, someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil, so to speak.
Weak radio signal. 700 meters. Closing fast.
There's no place for ghost stories and close encounters in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
To save yourself.
Of course. What else would it be?
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.